Of all the things that unite the cats that have been summoned to wreak havoc inside this insidious target deep in the heart of Shoping's Maw, one thing stands out above all the rest. Death certainly becomes them. And as death looks on, as dogs and bunnies and nemeses are sent to the other side of that cosmic veil, he notably does not wear a smile. Because the unnatural ritual of the Cult of the Leash is getting dangerously close to completing its goal of resurrecting man. And at the center of this conspiracy is a tan dog typing away at a keyboard, and a life-stealing cricket whispering in her ear.
Inga wants to turn to Skunder and say, Skunder.
Yes?
Can you use your magical cat ESP to tell everybody now is our chance? We must attack the points of weakness.
Yeah, on it. You just hear a big... and that's the signal for now's our chance to strike.
So I sort of meant like send a quiet magic message, but
oh.
You do you, Skunder.
I understand. And then he sends a very calm ESP message to everyone that says,
now is the time in which we should make our plan of attack reality. Thank you.
Where are you, witch?
Bulla, to the lights!
And off in the distance, you see a tan dog that you know to be Bulla's lost sister, Honora, working furiously at a computer while a sinister-looking cricket sits on her shoulder and whispers in her ear.
I'd like to kill that cricket, please.
Yeah, what would you like to do?
I'd like to blow it up.
You turn to this, where are you at right now? You're with...
I'm on Inga, on Inga, with Inga.
You're with Inga.
We gotta move a little bit to get to the...
Are you trying to, like, snipe it from a distance? Are you trying
I'm trying to magic snipe it from a distance.
Yeah, go for it. Make a roll. What kind of roll do you want to make?
We're gonna do Cunning and Ferocity, because we're magic-y.
This cricket is extremely powerful and magical. It's gonna be rolling a D12 and a D10. Are you doing ferocity?
Yes.
You are. Okay, so no additional D6. As you fire off this bolt, you see one of the cricket's ears perks up. It spins around and begins to blast up an arcane shield. let's see who makes it first.
I knew that cricket was bad news.
Arcane cricket.
Oh, bitch, you cannot have done better.
Why would 11. You jinx it?
That's an 8 and an 11.
Fuck! Fuck!
Fucking cricket.
So is this he and I are dead?
You both will die.
How many lives do you have left?
I've got 4. We're okay.
Okay.
Skunder has abandoned Roderick for magic for the first time and is channeling Hello Kitty in this moment of like attempts to, despite his freaky one huge pupil eye and just general kind of not cute vibes. He tries to do a very cute, like, tink, tink, big blink of his eyes. And at first, it successfully explodes the cricket, and then he feels it come back to him and is like, oh shit. And then he fully explodes.
Yeah, you hold on to the spell a little bit too long. A
little bit too long.
You feel this magic rip through you as Inga right next to you. Yeah, Skunder just explodes.
Fully.
Fully explodes. But rather than being like, gory, it's just kind of like a firework. You just hear
Skunder, it's glorious.
An incredible amount of light and noise emanates from Skunder as Skunder explodes. Inga, you see every dog that is down there performing this ritual turns towards you.
Oh, Inga was thinking that might come to this. She's gonna let out a howl. And she's gonna bush up to her full capacity. And she's gonna
run like right on the edge of the dogs in an effort to get all of them to chase her.
You could certainly succeed in that without a roll.
Okay. Because here's where she's going.
Yeah, where are you going with this?
Inga is going to get these dogs to chase her for enough period of time where, like, they've got to start panting a bit, so they're going to drop their leashes. And then she's going straight for the clothing racks in the hopes that all their leashes are going to get stuck on hangers and they will be hoisted by their own petards.
Sounds foolproof to me. No role necessary.
Yeah, no role necessary.
So what are you trying to kill here? You are trying to kill their mobility?
I am trying to kill their mobility by getting their leashes like caught up and tangled in hangers and racks and mannequin legs.
This is
mannequin
great.
Legs.
All right. The dogs naturally roll 2d8s. They are armored. I think in this case that will help them because I think the armor will be like less able to get tangled, kind of.
Okay.
So if you do not roll viciousness, they'll get an extra d6.
Okay. I'm going to use my piercing fangs, blessing of piercing fangs, to add an extra d6
against
armored foes. I'm going to roll ferocity because it's d12.
Well, I'm going to say, I'm not going to let you do piercing fangs because you're not trying to pierce them.
But
in the same respect, I'm not going to give them the benefit of being armored because I think you're not trying to kill them. You're trying to kill their mobility.
Yes. Okay.
So I don't think either of them apply.
Okay. I'm going to roll ferocity, which is a d12, and I'm going to roll viciousness, which is usually a d6, but I'm going to use the blessing of claw and tail to increase my viciousness by one die, making it a d8.
Okay. The dogs are going to be rolling 2d8s. They don't get the benefit of being armored.
Okay.
So let's see what you get.
This could be Inga's last stand. Oh. All right. I rolled a 2 and a 9.
They rolled a 3 and an 8.
Yes!
I was so sure I had
yes!
you.
Yeah. I have 9 lives.
Inga the Unsinkable, damn it.
Inga the Unsinkable strikes again.
Inga, as you lead these dogs on a merry chase through this store, through this clothing aisle, what does it look like as you kill their mobility?
Oh, Inga is, you know, she's on her last life and she was already a kind of an old kitty. She's done what she can and she's large, but is she agile. And she's doing like basically little agility drills, like bouncing back and forth and through all the things. And she's weaving here and there and everywhere. And all the dogs, yes, chasing her eventually. I mean, they're getting a little out of breath, so they got to start panting and their leashes all get caught and tangled in all of the things over there in the clothing section.
You lead them on a merry chase through and back and around all these racks and things, jumping up and down. And one by one, each of these leashes gets tangled on something as the dogs get pulled back. And, you know, this is kind of what they were looking for. They're the cult of the leash. They wanted to be controlled. They thought it would be by the hand of a man. Instead, it is by a clothing rack carrying a bunch of t-shirts.
I think the last thing that Inga does once she knows they've all been contained is she's going to knock a shoebox off a shelf and out tumbles a little pair of fuzzy kitty slippers just to sit on the floor and taunt them.
You see these dogs are chomping at the bit, pulling on their leashes as hard as they can to get close to you, but they are just inches from your face, unable to move any further. As all of them are just screaming at you,
you can't stop our plan. We'll bring back man. We'll bring back humans. We want pets. We want scritches. We want treats.
And Inga's just gonna sprint. She's kind of just doing laps. She's kind of got the zoomies at this point, as a little bit lost the plot. And is sort of, she's like, where am I supposed to be again?
Bala, you see on this computer that your sister is working furiously at, there is a progress bar that is currently sitting at 94%. And as she types faster and faster with her paws, okay, she's kind of whacking it.
So Bulla shows up to where Skunder was first and clearly has like catnip all over his nose, got distracted for a solid whatever you guys are doing for a bit, and goes, hey, you see a cricket around here? I think I'm looking for a cricket.
Skunder has reformed, I guess, from having exploded, and is like,
oh yeah, I saw a cricket, but he didn't see me, if you know what I mean.
Oh, you killed sure the cricket?
Yeah, the cricket's crick paste. Crick paste?
Oh, that's awesome. I think that makes...
Oh, is your sister not the one you wanted to kill?
No.
Oh, my bad.
Bulla, you see your sister continuing to work on this project. And in your head, you have that thought of, like, from my understanding, like, she was duped by Ethel, this cricket who was like whispering and things into her ear and seducing her to the dark side of the cult of the leash. But that spell should be broken if such a thing existed. This cricket you see is just like a green stain on the screen. She continues to work unabated.
I run up to Anura and I'm like, hey, remember me?
She momentarily stops, turns around, and goes, Bulla? What are you doing here?
Came to kill Ethel, but my buddy did that, so that was pretty cool. Don't gotta do that anymore.
You shouldn't have done that. Ethel was helping me.
Yeah, she was a dick.
I mean, she was helping me bring back a man.
You don't need a man. You're a confident young dog.
Say it. Yeah.
You don't need no
male
man.
Male feminist in the house.
She looks at you and goes, No, Bulla, you don't understand. Ethel told me about what humans used to do. They used to feed us and pet us and give us scritches and let us lie on their laps and pet our bellies, and they did it with cats too. It'd just be good to bring people back.
But we can just be a family. Like, we don't need man. Remember when we were kids and we were happy and it was a better time. We lived together and we didn't need a human to put us on leashes and tell us when to eat and tell us when we were good and when we were bad. We could pee where we want. I didn't have a box I could pee in. You could pee where you could do whatever you did. No one put your face in it. If you did it somewhere that wasn't responsible, it was a good time. We don't need men.
But Ethel made scritches sound so nice. They sound so good and fun. And we could play fetch and all this stuff. And I could wear a leash and go on walks. And it'd be so nice.
You want that? That sounds nice to you?
Yeah. Don't you? You see on your sister's face, she seems to have been in some way brainwashed by this cult.
Bulla looks at her and goes, fine. If that's what you want, then I'll take revenge on who brought Ethel into your life. And then I'm going to use my blessing of the gifted breath of mankind's babe.
Oh, good thinking.
So I can, on one occasion, issue a simple command to a dog and they must obey.
Mm.
And I look at Anura and I say, I invoke this blessing, and then I say, kill death.
You see Anura stand at attention and issues out a low whine and a kind of a growl echoes deep from within her. And for a moment between the two of you, time kind of stops as the sounds of deer running through this place and fire and dogs barking and cats running and electricity sparking all fades into the background as you hear slow skeletal footsteps and a slow pull of a cape. As death emerges from the inky blackness and walks towards Anara.
I look at Death and I say, "You said I would get her back."
"If you want me to honor the pact that we've made, then you'll just have to wait until your debt is paid. You came here with a task that you've yet to see through, and you whine now to me of what I'm meant to do? Oh, the price for betrayal's one you can't afford. But if you don't believe me, then best draw your sword."
I draw my sword, no, along with Anura.
"We both made a deal when I spoke to you last. I'd undo the terrors that riddled your past.
Oh, that's it?
I'm trying to think of more rhymes.
He's spinning. You got it. Let him cook. Let him cook.
"I promise that I will keep my word if you can destroy that thing before it's born anew."
"Yeah, I'm done with you." Oh. And I think me and Anura charge Death.
Ooh. This is nuts.
Death always rolls 2d12s. This is the only time in this game, if you challenge Death, that ties do not kill both people. Instead, ties go to Death.
So you have to roll higher.
You have to roll higher. And I'll say in this instance, because you're both charging, if you fail, both of you will lose a life.
Cool.
But Dog's only got one.
Yep.
Dog's only got one.
Yeah, but all dogs go to heaven, so it's okay.
Like just my dice, or do I get anything, any bonus for?
I'll let you roll an additional d6 for Anura.
That's such bullshit. Okay.
What do you want?
What's the point of the d? Oh, I guess because that could still be a d12.
Yeah.
What if it was a d8 as a treat?
Yeah.
Cats deserve a little treat.
Because don't dogs roll a d8?
Dogs roll. All right, fine. I'll give you one more d8.
One more d8, Your on Honor. Top of the d6?
Not on top of the d6. Don't get greedy. Let me know what you get.
That is 8 high.
Death stares you down, draws its sickle, and with a 2 and a 10, cleaves you both with a single ferocious swipe. As you fly off towards Valhalla, you feel a skeletal hand on you pull you back down, pulls you close, and whispers in your ear,
"I gave you a job. Now go see it through. I've told you the thing that you have to do. You must kill this man before it's brought back. But instead, you look to me and decide to attack. Oh no, dear cat. I promise you this. Finish this job, and I'll finish you quick."
Releases you and allows you back up to Valhalla to attain your next blessing.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. That's fine.
You appear back in front of Death, kind of like crumpled down on your knees. Death reaches down and picks you up by your elbow, kind of dusts you off, straightens your back. You see your sister next to you, cleft in twain by Death's sickle.
A lot of things are getting cleft in twain.
A lot of things getting cleft today.
If you want your sister, you'll have to atone. Complete this task and trade her life for your own.
Oh! This guy's not fucking around.
Bella looks at his sister's dead body and looks at Death. Doesn't say a word. And then pushes off and walks toward the human thing in the middle.
You walk towards this resurrecting human. You begin to see behind you the progress bar. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Bing! Hits 100%. A jolt of electricity flies through the electricity cords, and like a defibrillator, you see this man jolt up and stand at attention immediately in front of this lazy boy. The tubes and wires fall out.
No.
However, you see this orange pulp leaking out from the crevices and the places where vacuum and flesh are poorly attached together. This creature has essentially, this man, as it comes back to life, would be rolling for each of its various limbs and would be rolling at 2d12s for each of them. Because you have so infected this thing, it will be instead rolling 2d8s for different parts of its body.
Yeah, cheese balls.
Skunder sort of stands beside Bella, ready to fight this thing.
Mr. Tumbo appears with his great axe in hand beside the two of them and goes, ha!
And he says,
ha ha!
No, I was going for and my axe.
Inga, not knowing about all of this exciting drama going on with Death and Bella and Bella's sister, and Full just still in zoomies mode, has been making this sort of loop, and her loop comes to the point where she runs up from behind everybody and leaps straight over them. She's gonna go straight for the face. Claws, all five sharp ends pointed straight at this creature's face.
Yeah. As you fly towards this thing, you see its face turn towards you, and it is entirely made of metal.
Oh, good.
With just flesh pasted on top of it. It would be rolling 2d12s. Instead, it is only rolling 2d8s. However, this thing is metal and armored.
So against armored creatures, viciousness is the way to go, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Is it giant or is it just armored?
It's essentially different parts of its body will have different features. So its skull is armored, but not considered giant. Oh,
but it as a whole. I see.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
All right, what are you rolling?
Inga is going to roll with ferocity. So it's her d12. Then she's going to roll with viciousness, which is usually a d6, but she's going to use Blessing of Claw and Tail to increase viciousness by one die to a d8.
Okay.
And then she's going to use the Blessing of Piercing Fangs to add 1d6 against armored foes.
Okay.
And then if you'll allow it, she's also going to use the Blessing of Bubs's Fur to add another d6 because she is attacking from the darkness.
No way you're attacking from the darkness. This place is the brightest place in the world right now.
But
no way.
Can you? Okay, I have a question.
Come on.
It doesn't specify that it means literally a dark room. She's attacking from the darkness of her heart.
All right, now you've sold me. Now you've sold me. Okay, sure.
Inga's in a dark place.
Oh, darkness of the heart.
Awesome. Darkness of the heart. Yes.
Gotcha. The heart of darkness.
The heart of darkness, yes.
It burns it.
Yes.
Oh, no. Can you tell me what you got first?
Rolled a 7 and an 8.
The The highest Inga got is a 5.
Oh!
Oh my god.
Inga, as you fly through this well-lit area with your heart of darkness, claws akimbo, you see this terrifying creature having just been resurrected, flesh and metal and vacuum and orange pus leaking out of it. Let me know, what does Inga's final moments look like?
Inga leaps through the sky, 5 sharp ends pointed straight at this metal face, and I guess she doesn't succeed at all, does she? No. So all 5 ends, sharp ends pointed at this metal face, and she tries to grip onto it, but there's just nowhere for her to grip. And so she just sort of, like nails on a chalkboard, slides down this thing and falls beneath it. And I think, what's the most glorious way for her to go? Can we say she's trying to dig her claws in and like nails on a chalkboard is sliding down this metal face, and that she gets to its torso, which is partially flesh, and does manage to scratch down its sides until she gets to the middle, when it takes 1 big metal arm and smacks her off. And she goes flying off to the side, having left her mark in a big sweeping arc, a scar that would never quite heal on this body if it were to survive. And as she goes flying off into the distance, she knows that she's gonna hit something hard. And she embraces this feeling of flight before it comes to an end.
You fly through the air and brace yourself for that final impact, an impact that never comes. You fly and fly and fly, and feel your arms lifted up from either side as the Valkyries grab onto you from either side and pull you, rather than from the side, up and up and up. You see the gates of Valhalla, which you have visited many times before, finally open to you. Yield to your majesty and your glory and accept you, a cat having given 9 lives to enter Valhalla. For the rest of you, you see Inga fly and disappear into the darkness as this monster rears back. The dogs around you, still tangled up, begin to cower in fear and prostrate themselves, worshiping this man as it reaches forward, trying to grab onto leashes as it begins to stand up and menace towards you. What do you guys do?
Mr. Tumbo, with years of battle-hardened instinct, remembers that he made a miscalculation earlier and he's actually died 8 times, and so he's on his last life, and
math isn't his strong suit.
Math is not his strong suit, and the reality of watching his of Inga just die so gloriously, he hungers for the same glorious death. And as the man raises his arm to get the leashes, I'd like to bring my axe down on the arm and try and honestly sunder it in twain.
You see this hand is glowing purple with this strange Icarus magic.
Oh, okay. So I'll roll a ferocity because that's against magic. So I'll roll a d12 for brutality and a d8 for ferocity. and an additional d6 because of my great weapon.
All right, it's just rolling 2d8s.
No!
Did you roll hot again?
I'm rolling hot.
Brian, stop it!
God damn it. Yes, I got an 8. Okay, I rolled an 8 on that and a 4 and a 3 on the other ones.
This arm rolled a 4 and a 7.
Yeah!
Nice!
Hell yeah. Mr. Tumbo, with your last life, you fly through the air, battle axe akimbo, and slash down on this arm as this Icarus magic pulses towards your friends. This blast veers off and hits the ceiling. A large part of the ceiling caves in as this arm shatters onto the ground. The 80s are over. And you're not kids anymore. Now is a much darker time. Something happened to you and you got touched by the weird, and it made you wild, and it made you powerful. This is the world of The Lost Bay, a suburban gothic RPG. A fever dream set in 1990X and inspired in equal parts by dark fantasy, horror classics, and the 90s indie culture. After years of development, and thanks to the feedback and support of a community of early enthusiasts, The Lost Bay is coming to Kickstarter, featuring a full rulebook and complete setting designed by Eco, kick-ass art by Evangeline Gallagher, killer maps by Strega Wolf Vandenberg, and 6 additional modules by some of the coolest designers in the indie scene. So go right now to thelostbayrpg.com to back this project. That's thelostbayrpg.com. The Gardens of Yin is now funding on Kickstarter. The Gardens of Yin is a randomized depth crawl adventure set in an ever-shifting extra-dimensional garden. The deeper you head into the gardens, the more perilous and unusual the locations become, ending in whatever secrets lie in the garden's deepest depths. Each route of your expedition is generated as it's explored, resulting in new vistas being unlocked with every visit. This campaign will remaster Gardens of Yin by Emmy Allen, with new art by Riot Bones and an offset print run by Soul Muppet Publishing. Gardens of Yin is made for old-school systems, but can be easily converted for use in other TTRPGs. To support this project, search Gardens of Yin on Kickstarter. That's Gardens of Yin, spelled Y-N-N, on Kickstarter. Have you ever had a boring boss battle in a role-playing game? Ever struggled your way to the climax of a dungeon only to spend 3 hours taking turns, rolling to hit? Ever wished there was a way to have exciting fights where your tactics matter without getting bogged down in minutiae and maths? Of course you have. And the good folks at Rowan, Rook & Deckard, creators of Spire, Heart, and many other fine role-playing games, are doing boss battles justice with Hollows. Hollows uses a lock-on combat grid focused around the boss monster instead of the location. So it's always the center of attention, and your position always matters. With rules inspired by Bloodborne and Monster Hunter, and a setting inspired by Silent Hill and Jacob's Ladder, Hollows is a unique new game from award-winning designers Grant Howitt and Christopher Taylor. You can learn more and download the free quick start adventure, The Sins of Grisham Priory, by visiting rrdgames.com/hollows. Bulla or Skunder or Hello Kitty, what do you guys do?
I just want to shoot some gnarly fucking magic at him.
You look at the torso. This torso is massive. The torso itself is considered giant.
Yeah, I think that Skunder is trying more, is not trying Hello Kitty magic again because he exploded. So he goes back into his pouch of tricks and he eats a little bit of blue catnip and snorts a bit of red catnip, and you see each paw starts to glow. So we're doing magic. Cunning and ferocity.
Oh yeah. Since you're not rolling brutality, it will get an additional D6.
I'll take it, because my brutality's shit.
Brian, you put that face away.
That's not excellent.
It's not that bad.
A 1, a 2, and a 7.
4 and 2 fives. Skunder, you blast forward with these epic magics, both having snorted and swallowed a bunch of various tinctures and things. Smash this magical bolt directly into the torso. You see this partially metallic, partially flesh torso get torn apart, and it kind of like crumples in on itself. You see this thing is still able to move, but it's slowly like kind of falling in on itself.
That's where all the juice was.
The juice starts leaking out.
Ew.
But as you do that, a bunch of its metal and skin gets peeled back, and you see inside, rather than a beating heart, you see a glowing screen.
Teletubbies.
It is the Teletubby.
This is actually how the Teletubbies were made. This is their origin story.
Prophecy says they'll bring about a great baby son to scorch the earth of sin.
I thought you were going to say there was like a chihuahua inside it or something.
No, they're being controlled by a phone.
The essence of man.
The essence of man is indeed a phone. Hello Kitty or Bulla? What do you guys do?
What's taken out right now?
You see the head got attacked but didn't get hurt. One of the arms is lopped off. The chest has been caved in, revealing some kind of heart. As that heart gets revealed, this glowing screen that's kind of encased in various bits of like sinew and things, Bulla, you hear that familiar skeletal whisper in your ear.
I buzz, I beep, I think, I'm smart, I'm barely a brain, and I'm hardly a heart. Like a dog, man still needs his bone to kill this one dead. Destroy that damn phone.
Bulla turns to Hello Kitty and goes, that glowing thing needs to be destroyed.
I think now's a good time to tell you that I'm a witch.
When? How? Did the witch do this to you?
Finally.
No, it's been happening this whole time in front of your eyes. You just seem really sensitive about it, and I feel like we have a decent relationship, so I didn't want to say anything. But I want to tell you, because I'm going to try to use my magic to get the phone. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, love you. Okay, I'm going to, if it's okay, I'm going to try to use magic to send like an electromagnetic pulse and kill the phone.
Whoa.
Not the guy, the phone. Thoughts?
I think the phone's gonna kill the guy. Yeah.
You can absolutely shoot for the phone. I will say, because this thing's heart, the phone itself, because it's not biological in any way, it's not affected by the orange cheese puffs. So it's still rolling its max die.
Okay, well, good for the phone.
Ryan, let me tell you, if you drop a phone in cheese puffs, that thing's gonna be fucked up.
Every time I shove cheese balls into my phone's ports, it's
clog the ports, it's not getting a full charge.
But if you destroy this heart, you're essentially destroying both the brain and the heart of this thing, and it all other parts of it will cease. You'll be able to kill this thing in one shot.
Okay. I'm still jacked, right?
You're still jacked.
Fucking yoked.
But I'm going to use magic, so maybe I should still use... Oh, but my brutality is at its highest, right?
Brutality is at a D12,
I can do a D12? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Let's freaking rock, man. Let's freaking rock and roll, as they say. Okay.
Let me know, okay. What are you rolling altogether?
I'm going to roll 2d12, and I'm going to roll a d6.
Okay. The heart is just rolling 2d12.
Tens.
I believe in you, Hello Kitty.
Hello Kitty. Oh, no. Oh, no, would they're both showing bad faces.
Hello, Moto.
No, Michelle got a good one.
Okay, I rolled a 5, a 7, and a 10.
That's good.
Brian, you rolled lower than that.
The heart rolled a 3 and a 12.
No!
Okay, I literally have 8 lives.
Do it again!
So we're just gonna keep again. This running, baby.
Hello Kitty, you blast magic towards it with your beefed up arm. You sling a magical bolt at 2, 3, 4 times the speed you would have slung it. It hits into the phone. You see the phone suck in this energy, and then like an EMP, blast it out. You get taken off your feet immediately as this sonic burst hits you, sending you straight to Valhalla to gain another blessing and lose another life. Bulla, you see Hello Kitty get blasted back as this phone seems to emanate, and you hear a terrifying call, if ever I did hear one.
Could I enchant Bulla's Arumis to increase the die size? Would you allow?
Ooh.
I will allow you to do that if you decrease one of your die sizes.
Ooh.
Oh, like forever.
Yeah.
That's a good trade.
Bulla, what do you use with your Arumis, and what are the sizes?
Brutality and viciousness, and one of them is a D12, and one of them is a D10.
Okay, make that D10 a D12.
Nice.
And I'm going to bring my ferocity down to a D10.
After I see Hello Kitty, I'm like, no, my witch friend!
And Skunder comes up to you and says, you've got one other witch friend, and then just grabs onto your hands holding your roomies and channels this like blue and red energy into them.
Awesome.
Paolo looks down like embarrassed and goes, I'm so sorry, witch. You deserve my respect.
It's Skunder. Always a good start.
Sorry, Skunder.
Aww.
Go get him.
And then I'm going to go charge the heart.
You charge forward. What are you going to be rolling?
Viciousness and brutality.
And any other blessings?
I'm using my blessings to increase my die sizes already. And then...
Do you have the one where you add a D6 to your dual weapons or no?
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Twin snakes?
Yeah. Twin snakes.
Nice.
Blessing of twin snakes.
Go ahead and roll your dice.
Sick.
I can't read Brian's face.
11, 5, and 3, dude.
No.
If you say 12, I'll fight you.
Stop it.
That's a 12. No! You son of a bitch. Fuck you.
You send these Arumis towards this phone, and as you hit it, the phone grabs, like the Arumis sink into the phone for a moment as if disappearing into a portal. It electrifies your Arumis, and that jolt goes straight up your arms, sending you blasting out of your body up to Valhalla.
I was going to say it should rip my arms off again.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're better.
The
phone grabs onto your things, electrifies them, and then whips, and your arms fly off again.
Like, why does this always happen to me?
The Valkyries are like, what are you doing down there,
guys? I don't know.
All right. I would like to try. I would like to try and, now that Roderick's head is nothing but a sharp rat head mounted on the end of an arrow, and fire the arrow at the phone.
Cool.
Fucking A, man.
You can do it. Brian can't roll hot forever.
Hey, Brian, let me ask you this thing. Let me ask you something.
Yeah, what do you want to ask me?
When using this weapon against dogs and other commonly domesticated creatures, roll an additional d6. Could I argue that a phone is a commonly domesticated creature of man?
I think it's a pretty strong case, if you ask me.
I'll let you do it, sure.
That's great, because these dice are not that big.
Oy. Come on.
Okay.
Scundy.
It's an 8.
No, Brian!
What else?
And a 6 and a 4.
You mount Roderick's head on the front of an arrow, fire it forward towards this phone in the center of this unholy concoction of flesh and metal and technology and orange cheese puffs. You see the arrow disappear inside this portal of a phone. You hear it beep. Once, twice, three times the lady. And the phone rolled a 3 and a 7.
Yeah! Woo! Meow!
Meow! You what? See the screen. What's that wolf doing here?
Ooh, wolf.
You see the screen momentarily pulse and look as if it will redirect the arrow, and then the black mirror cracks. The arms slough off of this creature. The head slowly begins to shimmy off of it as it collapses into a heap on the ground. Orange pus filing out of it. Electricity sparking on the ground as these raw wires are kind of spittering about. You guys see the fire around you has begun to catch. The dogs have extricated themselves from their collars, leaving their leashes and collars behind, abandoning their cult of the leash, possibly once and for all, with this ritual having been destroyed. Fire is spreading all around you. The dogs are running out of the door, and you see entrance points are beginning to close off to you. What do you all do?
I think as Bala is running out, he looks back at like death and where Unura's body is, and sees like the splotch of the dead cricket against the computer. and is like sees like a charmed necklace that carries one of Bala's stolen lives that Ethel has taken from him in like Bala's initial pursuits of Ethel and Unura. And I've taken the blessings of Cold Flame to gain knowledge of dark magics, because I think after Hello Kitty told me they were a witch, I am much more susceptible and open to the idea of magic.
Not Skunder, though.
Not Skunder.
No. And then I came...
I get it.
Yeah, and Skunder. definitely Skunder, too.
Skundy.
And I think I take the charm and, like, use my magic to, like, take it and put it into my sister's life. And then I think use my magic ability to like send death a message that's like, you think your rhymes breed fear, but I'm not scared of you, my dear. My life won't be given to restore my sister. My life I won't trade to bring back my kin, but yours I will claim for hers to begin. And then
what the F?
I think Unra stabs death in the back to try and for her to become death.
You want Unra to do it?
Yeah, she's doing it. I want her to become death, and you can still play death.
Oh, I see.
It's so that this is the only rhyme Chinook has to do.
Exactly.
Go ahead and roll whatever dice you think Anora would be able to roll.
I think she'd roll like 4d12.
Yeah, probably like a couple of D12s.
Yeah, I'm thinking a D20, baby.
Uh-huh. Yeah, probably a couple. Three D20s is probably what she's rolling.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'm rolling 3D20s. Right,
so I'm gonna remind you that I'm an eat your broccoli DM.
I think she should roll like with my pool of dice because it's my life and like my magics that's assisting her.
That makes sense.
I'll let you do that.
Actually.
Okay.
And cool. A D100.
Sweet, sweet, sweet.
What'd you roll?
I love when everybody rolls and then you come back and everyone has a poker face and it's like, who's gonna go first?
I rolled a 2. I rolled a 5. And I rolled a 10.
You speak a rhyme to death. You feel the pulse of one of your past lives having been captured by Ethel, and you push it into Honora. You see her behind death reach down to her side, draw a sword from a scabbard, and with death distracted by your words, plunges it forward. Death's sickle swings around without looking to deflect it. A moment too late. As death rolls a 1 and a 1. Honora, from where you are standing, you see Honora disappear behind death. Death momentarily, without looking, swing back, and instead of blocking her blade, he guides it. Her sword pierces through, her arm piercing through the veil of death as she steps forward and in her thrust assumes the mantle. You hear that whisper from death once again.
Now my game is played out. I've used up my last card. For completing this service, you have my regard.
And death, with his final action, gives a small bow to you as Honora stumbles forward into death's mantle, taking the sickle in her own hand, looks at you and goes,
brother, what? How did this happen? This was, okay. What's happening? I feel almighty cosmic power and I feel the many tethers of life and death.
You're back, kid.
Holy shit. This is so cool.
You see her, look around and kind of splays out her hands as skeletal fingers kind of spread out. She looks around and takes in, and for a moment you see her vision kind of comes onto you, and in the center of death you see an infinite almost like ring around her, but as you look a little bit closer, it is not a solid ring, but rather individual tendrils of threads. Delicate though they are, all connecting you and all the things around you to death. So easy and so delicate. So simple to pluck. She has the complete power to do with what she wants, and she turns to you and says,
hey, let me take care of this one.
Plucks one of the threads, and immediately the fire extinguishes as she kills the fire.
Ooh.
Oh. I give her a big hug. Like, I missed you.
She gives you a big hug back and just goes,
I don't know what got into me. I thought that I wanted something that I didn't need. Ethel was whispering in my ear for so long, I didn't know what was up and what was down.
It's okay. Come meet my friends. They're two of them are very nice witches. And I say, hey guys, this is my sister. She's death now.
Skunder goes prostrate.
Yeah, Tumbo also takes a knee and pledges his sword to her.
Also, is she a skeleton-y death, or does she still look like herself?
She's skeletally.
Still good.
You guys begin to walk out of this store. Now, flames have been snuffed. Dogs have fled. Deer are kind of just like walking around having a good old time.
Union strong.
Union strong. Yeah, yeah. All the deer on strike. As you guys exit, any last thoughts you have on your way out of Shoping's Maw back to the murderess?
Skunder, I think, hangs back a little bit and reaches into one of his pouches and sort of opens it to, like, look down. And you see the, like, broken phone he swiped and is carrying with him in one of the pouches. Ooh. In one of the pouches. And I think it starts to vibrate a little bit.
You feel that vibration, some kind of mystical power, and quickly close the pouch and pull it to the side, far away from prying eyes. Mr. Tumbo.
Mr. Tumbo walks forward with a confident stride and a rakish grin. He's found new purpose to spend his last life in service of death. And so he's just going to follow Death around and wait for orders from her about who she wants dead.
Death reaches over and just gives you a small scratch behind the ears.
Don't worry, I've got some jobs for you lined up.
Hello Kitty.
Hello Kitty takes one of the jars of protein powder, adding it to her collection or of ingredients because it had really good effects. And she also has found a t-shirt that has Sanrio Hello Kitty on it. She puts it on, but because she's jacked, it looks like a really tight crop top.
With your new fashion statement, you stride confidently through Shoping's Maw. Mm-hmm. And Bulla, walking side by side with your sister, now having taken the mantle of death. What are your last thoughts as you leave Shoping's Maw and board again the murderess?
I think Bulla is trying to decide like which school of magic he wants to learn from, the Hello Kitty school of silence or the skull school of Skunder.
Skull and drug.
Skull and drugs.
Skull druggery, if you will.
Skull druggery.
Nice. Very good, very good, very good. And Inga, you don't get an epilogue quite like everyone else's because you've made it past the gates of Valhalla. So tell me, what does Valhalla look like to Inga?
Inga is living it up in Valhalla. I think she is drinking milk by the jug and recounting all of her favorite tales to a very captive audience, and is even taking a lot of pleasure in telling the tales of her friends who are still down on the murderess. And she likes to peek over and sort of take a look and cheer them on, and is excited to see Bulla and Honora being the funny tag team now as Death and her brother. And Hello Kitty will be very pleased to hear that Inga's fur looks resplendent.
You all board the murderess, and as you unfurl the sails and pull up the anchor and begin to sail off, you see off in the distance on the shore, on top of a rock outcropping with a number of waves crashing right underneath it, a very small orange tabby cat, rather tabby kitten. And somewhere on the wind, you hear the voice of this very small cat wishing you a fond farewell with the words,
You cats caught the soul that these dogs tried to thieve. With my audit all finished, I'll now take my leave. You finished my task without whine or complaint. Some say help's hard to find now, well, I say it ain't. So thus ends our story, our tale is complete. But there's just one more thing, won't you please keep your seat? I urge you, dear listener, to rate and review. Else I will turn my eye off of these cats onto you. And remember one thing from these cats here tonight. If you're all having fun, then you're doing it right.
Yay!
Wow, brilliant.
Yay!
Brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Of course, absolutely. Yeah.
Big orange cat energy.
That was great.
I thought you were going to say something about lasagna.
And that is all for this season of My First Dungeon, Nine Lives to Valhalla. Bye-bye, everybody.
Can I get a meow meow?
Meow meow.
Meow meow.
Meow meow.
Meow meow.
Don't you dare woof. Don't you dare woof.
Here.
Don't you think about it. Don't you think about it.
Bark.
No, no bark.
If you're hearing this, that means you listen to every last second of this episode. And if you simply cannot wait until the next episode drops, you should head over to patreon.com/myfirstdungeonpod and become a member of the Dice Pool. Fresh! For just a few bucks a month, you'll get cast talkbacks, original games, and a full-length bonus actual play each and every month. As of the end of 2023, there's already over 20 hours of bonus audio, plus a whole bunch of other goodies to enjoy. So head on over to patreon.com/myfirstdungeonpod and jump on into the dice pool. We'll see you there. Splash!